following in a bit late, a minute late. Just had a challenge with the gate here where I'm staying. May we welcome all portfolio committee members of health in this meeting with the Department of Health led by Minister Kubai. We welcome you, Minister, and we welcome your team. We would like to thank you for coming in, and our engagement with you is with this continued problem we have in the country. A two-weekly presentation by the minister and her team regarding where are we in terms of rolling out the vaccines. Are we winning on the Delta variant? Are there any other challenges that you might share with us as a portfolio committee? Now, I'll give this opportunity to the minister to then lead the presentation, and we will come thereafter, minister, to engage with you in the clarity-seeking questions, and then you come back again to help us with responses. If I may now invite you and give you this opportunity to make a presentation to the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good evening, Chairperson. Good evening, members of the portfolio committee, GM, colleagues. Thank you very much. Chair, if I'm correct, maybe I got worried when you made your opening. My understanding is that the focus of the discussion today is on vaccine. We were requested to present on vaccine, not generally all the issues. I hope I'm correct. The presentation that we have will ask Dr. Crisp to lead in the presentation. Members would know that we've made quite some progress in the vaccine rollout since our last briefing to the portfolio committee. Firstly, it's the ramping up of the vaccine rollout where we are switching. So we'll take through members in terms of the ramping up where we've passed our 5 million mark. I know it's not yet sufficient, as others have pointed out correctly, so in terms of the percentage versus the population, but we think we are doing very well in terms of improving. Secondly, it's the opening of the 35 plus population that is commonly now popularly known as the national group. They call themselves breadwinners. We've passed 1 million registration within 24 hours, but we are already seeing them literally not waiting for the first, but saying we want to be vaccinated now, which has given a positive spin in terms of the vaccine rollout, assisted in dealing with the issues around vaccine hesitancy, where they've literally shown that it's a population that is willing to take this vaccine program to another level. Another issue, Chair, is that you know, since we've presented here, we've launched the vaccine rollout within the security cluster. And also when we talk about security cluster, we talk about all those that are within the military, the police and others and correctional services. So all the security cluster in terms of government being included. Now also we had social development included in terms of the rollout. Where we are sitting now, we seem to see that, and then we've done the occupational health and safety ones. Where we are sitting, Chair, just to indicate to members, we are seeing that specific targeted vaccine programs, or what we call sector programs, seem to take a lot of admin work, preparation, and ensuring that you have to have the data reliability, and you've got to have verification methods that you must have. So one of the things now we're starting to think about and see how best we do is to say, let's ensure that we have the security of supply so that we can open quickly for the next cohort, so that we do not have to focus specifically on certain areas of the vaccine program in terms of sectoral basis. The ones that we have done have given us a lesson. And that's why out of those now, we're starting to have a conversation amongst ourselves who are responsible for this program to say what is the best way forward, and that would be some of the things that we would want to consider and look and present towards the IMC. We'll be appearing before the IMC tomorrow presenting some of the recommendations of what we want to see going forward. So recommendations around those areas, we can all go public about them once from a cabinet point of view they've been approved. So in terms of where we are, we are starting to monitor as well in terms of districts, performance, provinces, and the engagements that we are utilizing through the Presidential Coordinating Committee that has MECs and of local governments and of health together with premiers is helpful, because they start seeing and mayor metros and mayors and local government representatives. It's starting to showcase that everybody should pay attention to what we are doing there and be able to see whether their districts, their province, how they are performing. And following that presentation last week, we're starting to see more rigorous focus by provinces in ensuring that we can be able to protect our population in terms of vaccination and contributing towards immunity, though we are still far, as I said. We're looking at the percentage where we are sitting and would want to continue to wrap up. So we continue to brief the portfolio committee in terms of the updates on issues that have been approved and on issues that we would want to account in terms of how far we are going and the work that we are doing. So that's my remarks, Chair, of opening. And through you, if I may allow Dr. Chris, who's leading the presentation, and secondly, just to indicate that the DG will not be able to join us. We have agreed that DG will not be able to, or he's joined, I see he's here as a co-host as well, so that he can present. But it was Dr. Chris who will present. I see he's managed to join because initially he was not going to join, but it's fine. It means their meeting is finished because he was meeting with the teams in the provinces. While we are here, Chair, maybe let me just reflect. In terms of the riots that we've seen in the past few days, they have, to a certain extent in KZN, affected our vaccine rollout, whereby, for example, issue around vaccination, we had to take a decision to hold a bit the vaccination until we understood the situation, how it is, what is the impact, and how do we ensure the security of the vaccines so that they don't end up in wrong hands or we lose stock. In terms of that, but equally because people were not able to move across the province. So that's what we had to do, take that decision, and then later we had to resume. So vaccination has started in KZN, it's happening. In Gauteng, we stopped for a day and we were able to vaccinate continuously. So in broadly, because we're talking about health, the health supply as well was affected in terms of people having to access hospitals for their treatments, all other treatments in terms of your dialysis, in terms of other medication that they needed. Some of the facilities that were disrupted in terms of it's within the supply side of our medicines and as well in terms of distribution. We were able to secure distribution of oxygen to hospitals through escorts by police. So that was helpful. We were able to do that and ensure that there isn't shortage of oxygen in hospitals, in that we had to even engage the security cluster in various areas of interventions where there was a need for intervention and support, and we continue to do that. So that work in quantifying continues, Chair. We have a sense of where we are in quantifying the losses and what we have lost in terms of KZN specifically, but it's not yet finalized because some of the people are still accessing the sites to see what is there, to quantify what the loss is. But one of the other things, as I conclude, Chair, is that we need to continuously appeal to the population where they would find themselves with medicine in the black market, that they need to be careful because this might be medicine that is contaminated that might affect their lives. And this is the appeal we need to make into those communities, and make an appeal for them to, because many of them have been in interaction with people groups in this looting spree, And some of them would have come into contact with people who are positive, COVID positive, and we are requesting them to say when they see signs and they're not feeling well, they must present themselves to health facilities and test so that we can be able to contain the Delta virus within KZN. And we continue to be worried about likelihood of what we are going to see. The lag time, as we all know, is between 7 to 14 days that we're likely to start seeing the numbers going up in KZN. So that's what we are worried about, and we continue to monitor. Thank you very much, Chair. I hand over to Dr. Crisp to present.
As Dr. Crisp starts, thank you very much, Minister, with your opening remarks. May I request that whoever is going to present, starting with Nicholas Crisp, we also share your video and your face as this program is being taken live in our parliamentary programs. Thank you very much.
Good evening, Chairperson, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members and colleagues. Thank you very much. I'm not going to repeat any of what the Honourable Minister has already told you about, but what I would like to do is just share some of the statistics of where we are at the moment, and then I'll explain a little bit about where we believe we are going to and how long it's going to take us to get there. So this particular slide is from 8 o'clock this morning. We had done 5.57 million vaccines administered, and we are reporting on the two different vaccines we use. Johnson & Johnson is just over a million, and the Pfizer vaccine just over 4.5 million. And you can see the breakdown in this slide of where the various doses have been provided and administered. In the bottom left-hand corner, the colored bar charts show that that is where the Sisonke vaccinations, the J&J vaccination of the healthcare workers has been administered. And the next one is the since the end of the Sisonke program, where we have administered in the national program, Johnson & Johnson vaccines. Most of these, I think by now the public and the committee is aware that these vaccines expire on the 11th of August. And so they were most of them were allocated to specific public essential services programs, such as those the minister referred to in the security cluster. All of those projects are now running at full steam. And there are one or two small ones that are due to start on, as far as I know, on Monday, if it all goes according to plan. But they are rolling out, and then we'll see this middle colored group of bar charts rising as those vaccines are admitted. Then you can see on the right-hand side, the green and gold bars. The green is first doses that have been administered of the Pfizer vaccine, and the gold bars is the second doses. So Pfizer first doses, 3.671 million, and the second dose is 873,000. I think everyone knows by now the second dose is administered any time after 42 days from the first dose. It doesn't matter if it's delayed longer, but it shouldn't. We're not administering before the 42 days is up. So when we report fully vaccinated persons, we add the national total of the Johnson & Johnson vaccines to the Pfizer second dose. And those are fully vaccinated individuals. Whereas when we report on vaccines administered, it's all the vaccines administered. That might help to clarify things. If I can move to the next few slides, I'm going to take you through where we are province by province. Then it's easy to see where the challenges lie in the rollout program. So what we see in each of these slides will be on the left-hand side, the table with the numbers of individuals vaccinated and individuals fully vaccinated. And remember, that's now Johnson & Johnson single dose and those who've had two doses of Pfizer. So we are monitoring both of these numbers. And why that's important to us is because a single dose of Pfizer still conveys a lot of immune protection, at least from severe illness and hospitalization, very effective, but it is not totally effective against the transmission of the virus, and we want to break the transmission of the virus, which is why we are trying to also get as many as possible second dose vaccines done now. Johnson & Johnson is just a single dose of vaccine. So this table shows us that by the 8 o'clock on the 21st today, this morning, the number of individuals who had received the vaccination was 654,780 in the Eastern Cape, but the number who was fully vaccinated was 217,843. On the right-hand side, you can see represented graphically in the green bars each of the districts of the Eastern Cape, and that depends a lot on the population. And what we will be showing in subsequent slides and in our improved dashboards is what proportion of the total number of people in each of those target populations of those districts are we reaching. I'll show you one slide just now. The graph below shows the daily vaccinations, and you can see the dips are the weekends, and that is where the president has exhorted us to make a plan and to get services to run weekends, and there are a number of sites that have been identified where the capacity is possible, and they are already starting to put plans in place to either have one day or both days of the weekend for vaccination. But what you can see in the Eastern Cape chart is the picking up of the vaccinations through the Sisonke program from February to May, and then from the 17th of May, the slow start going through June up now into July, where we see a nice constant growth as more vaccines are administered because more sites are coming online and more staff are available. In the Free State, we see a similar picture. It's a smaller population, so their total vaccinations was 247,000, of which 100,000 and some are fully vaccinated. Again, the five districts of the Free State, with Mangaung being the most populous, has got the highest number of vaccinations. Remember, again, individuals vaccinated. This is also this series is all at 8 o'clock this morning, so up to the end of day yesterday. You can see the worm of on the bottom right-hand side also showing good growth. And what we're trying to monitor is that every week the peak is higher than the previous peak, and that we want to see the weekend dips either completely disappearing or smoothing off substantially as people are vaccinated over weekends. Gauteng province obviously has a huge population compared with other provinces, so they have vaccinated 1.1 million people so far. The individuals vaccinated fully is just under 500,000. And the concentration of that is in Johannesburg, which has the biggest population, then Tshwane and Ekurhuleni. And we are also can see in the graph on the bottom right-hand corner how each week is exceeding the targets of the previous week. And again, you can see here towards the end of July where the weekend disappeared because they were vaccinating over that weekend on some of their programs. KwaZulu-Natal, again, you see the individuals vaccinated, 840,000, of which just on half are fully vaccinated. And on the many districts of KwaZulu-Natal, eThekwini has got the biggest the biggest population and the biggest number of vaccinated individuals. And you can see the impact of the unrest. So now KwaZulu-Natal was interesting in that they adopted a different strategy when they started the vaccination program. They started with mass sites in the urban areas with large numbers of people being vaccinated in a very short space of time. And as they've moved their program out of the major urban centers into the more difficult places to reach, their numbers went down a bit. And then they peaked at the end of June, the beginning of July, when the educator program came on stream. And then you can see on the right-hand side, the dip where a whole week was lost in vaccinations. And on any one day, they went from, instead of doing between 35 and 40,000 vaccinations a day in that province, they only did between 2,500 and 5,500 because of the unrest that was going on. But all provinces are going to do what they can to support KZN to pick up with the lost opportunities of that week. Limpopo, the individuals vaccinated is just over 500,000. And again, almost half of that are fully vaccinated. And that's, remember, both the Johnson & Johnson and two Pfizer doses. Limpopo adopted a different strategy. It's a rural province, and it's a province where the population is perhaps less engaged with the technology. So they took their campaign out in a very proactive mobile way, using community health workers, community development workers, the community leaders from both the traditional community tribal leaders, plus the religious leaders and the political leaders of the local governments and so on. And they went on a big mobilization campaign week by week, stepping up into the rural areas. And it paid dividends for them. As you can see, their graph in the bottom right-hand corner grew very quickly through the month of June and has been fairly well sustained in July. They are now embarking on programs, particularly in the mining communities, where there are concentrations of people in workplaces, and workplaces where it's hard to isolate from other workers. And that's a new initiative that they are pushing quite hard in Limpopo. In Mpumalanga, they got off to a bit of a slow start. It's a smaller population, but they have vaccinated 235, almost 236,000 people. Not done as well with the fully vaccinated population, with only about just under a third vaccinated fully. But their program is growing steadily. You can see on the bottom right-hand corner, with the exception of that one very steep increase, which was the educator program, there is still constant week-on-week growth of their program. They're not closing many weekends yet, but there are two weekends there where you can see a little bit of a closure where they've been able to reach out. They are also now embarking on some community, some workplace programs in Sasol and in a couple of other, like in the mining community, the coal mining community, and I'm sure we will see those figures coming through in the next week or two. Northern Cape has a whole different set of challenges because of the rural nature of the province. They also have a very small population. They've reached 87,500 people, of which just under a half are fully vaccinated. The concentration of the population is in Kimberley, which is why Francis Baard District Municipality has the largest number of vaccinations. But you can see that their growth has been consistent, and we're very happy to see that, with a massive step up now in the last day or two. This province had been planned to be a solely Johnson & Johnson vaccine province because of the difficulties with the distances. And when the Johnson & Johnson vaccine was delayed and delayed and delayed, they had to switch their program to accommodate the Pfizer vaccine, which is a very different vaccine. It's different needles and syringes, different cold chain storage requirements. And so their month of May and June was very difficult for them. But since they got on top of it, I think they have now really shown they're able to build a sustained program. Northwest, there are a number of different features in Northwest's program. They have vaccinated 240,000 people with just under half fully vaccinated. The thing that's different about Northwest is that they have a large number of mining communities where the mining occupational health services in those areas have got substantial capacity and have been vaccinating their workers. But otherwise, we are pleased to notice that, like all the other provinces, they have had constant growth. And you can see now in July, in the last few days, how all provinces are picking up. That little steep upturn in the beginning of July was again the educator program when that got going. The Western Cape is the last province. The population is heavily concentrated in the Cape Metropole area, so that's why the concentration of their vaccinations are there. The total number of people vaccinated there is 831,000, but only a third of them are fully vaccinated. You can see from the graph on the right-hand bottom corner how their program has also grown. That peak in July was was also their education program, which really got going. They deliberately started it slowly to learn because they weren't sure how it was going to affect their community program. But once they got it going in the second week of July, it really took off, and they've had a sustained growth. They have now opened a mass sites now in the past week or so in the CTICC, and there are other mass sites, as the minister referred to earlier, that their provinces are opening, and it'll be very interesting to see how quickly these numbers pick up. In terms of coverage, what we are concerned about, and I'm not showing you per district here just because it gets very cluttered and busy, but what we are doing is we are trying to monitor that the whole country moves along and at an acceptable speed, and where we see that a province or districts within a province are lagging behind, then we support from national to both the private providers and the public sector to see if we can increase the rate of vaccination. So you can see in this graph on the left-hand side, the province, the total population just under 60 million. And we are updating to the Stats SA newest population figures that are provided to a provincial level. And then we are doing our own distribution below that to districts and sub-districts using the proportions of the previous disaggregated population. Be that as it may, if we look at the almost 60 million people in the total population, you can see the distribution of the vaccinations across the provinces in the second column of numbers. And the vaccination coverage ranges from the Western Cape of 10.45%, closely followed by the Eastern Cape at 9.75% and Limpopo at 8.9%. So rural provinces doing just as well as urban provinces, and some of the others a little bit behind. The insured and uninsured populations are something that we are monitoring very closely, because we don't want to see that the private sector is a runaway insured population. So I didn't mention the total vaccination coverage at the moment is 7.85%. which is more than double what it was 3 weeks ago. So the tempo of the program has picked up very nicely. The insured self-reported population is in the country is shown. So those are the medical aid members and beneficiaries, the 8.990 million people. And the vaccinated proportion of that 8.99 million is the 1.599 or 1.6 million, which is 17.8% of the insured population has been vaccinated. And you can see the concentration in the Western Cape, but also in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. The uninsured population is not as well vaccinated. And this is of concern because we are trying to get equity. And the problem, if the private sector runs ahead and the insured populations are the first ones vaccinated, then we leave the uninsured population behind. So on the third column from the right, that's the remaining portion of the population that is not insured by any medical scheme, the 50.8 million people, and only 3 million of that population has been vaccinated so far, which constitutes only 6.09%. Obviously, the weighted average is that we've reached 7.85% of the total population, but it does mean as a percentage of the total target, we are being less successful in getting to the uninsured than the insured. And part of the reason for that is the location of the many private sector sites in the urban areas where the majority of the insured population lives. It is also skewed by the fact that we have been vaccinating very heavily in the public sector on the health, social, and security clusters, and the vast majority of those people in the public sector programs are insured and are on medical aid. So when those programs are over, I'm pretty sure that the uninsured population will pick up, the tempo will pick up in that population. Just briefly to show the public healthcare workers as a group. So what happened was, and this is now a different date because I didn't have this access to this slide for today. This is dated on the 19th. It hasn't changed very much since then. The definition of healthcare workers was changed. And as a result of that, a very wide range of people who work as support structures and support professionals in the health system and not necessarily hands-on registered healthcare professionals are included in the group. So what is reflected here is the public healthcare workers, and one can see the total number, the 357,000 employed in the public sector. 271,000 of those have been vaccinated, which is a 76% coverage. Now, in a general population, to reach more than 70% would be a cause for a major celebration, because it's very seldom that one gets above about 70%. But this is an informed, targeted population in the health sector. And of those, 244,996 are fully vaccinated, and that means that 68% of the target population in the public healthcare workers is vaccinated. In the education sector, this has been quite a moving target, because we started off with educators and other workers in the education sector, but it then got, we weren't aware of in the beginning that it included the food workers on the school health program and others. So the databases grew to 826,000, but the program was designed to reach 480,000. And we reached 464,000 people, which is of the new listed education sector, only 56%. But because it's mostly the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in this sector, the figure, the percentage fully vaccinated is not vastly different. All provinces are continuing to vaccinate people out of the education sector who present themselves, but now no longer in a dedicated program. They will just go into the general public program. And we would like to get all sectors above 65% vaccinated. The Defence Force has recently started. Obviously, they are a little bit engaged with other things at the moment as well, so it's got off to a bit of a slow start, but it has only been a few days. They have vaccinated 9.44% of the target population, and they will embark on a second program to vaccinate military veterans when this is done, and they're using the South African Military Health Services, so they're not taking resources out of any other sector to vaccinate their members. The police has, South African Police Services, which includes IPED, and the police members who are both appointed in terms of the Police Act and the Public Service Act, constitute 187,000 people. This program has only recently got going as well. 28,000 people have been vaccinated so far, which is about 15% of the target population. And their target is to end by the 8th of August. So we hope that this tempo is going to pick up. So I think I will end there. That just gives you an idea of the statistics. And as the minister said, perhaps as I'm signing out of this, is that we are presently vaccinating 1 million people every 4 days, or very close to that. And our target is by the end of next week, we want to be vaccinating close to 1 million people every 3 days, certainly every 3.5 days. And that will mean that we will be able to have vaccinated at least one dose to 35 million people before Christmas. That's the target that we have been set and that we are chasing ourselves. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to stop at that point.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Chris, with that presentation detail. Let me just check on my, the first member that has indicated a desire to ask is Honorable Kwagube, will be followed by Honorable Masengwa. The third one is Honorable Sokacha. The fourth is Honorable Chirwa. May I now in this platform take additional names, number one being Kwagube, number two being Masengwa, the third one being Sokacha, the fourth is Chirwa. Any fourth hand? Any takers now? Okay. Honorable Kela Shauchka name here. Well, I'm no more looking at that platform. Number five would be Honorable Kela. Just shout here if there's another one after Honorable Kela. So we have five hands. I'll take out number six. Thank you very much. Can you start, Honorable Kwahube?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Acting Minister and her team. I'm aware that there was a reluctance to give a quantity on, or at least a sense of the damage that has been suffered over the unrest of the past week, of the past weeks. But I think it is quite important to get a sense from the minister and her team, because the Pharmacy Council has come out to say that at least 131 pharmacies have been destroyed, 80% of which are in KZN. And so it would be quite useful to understand what is the initial understanding of the damage that has been caused, and also what are the contingency plans that are in place to try and get those pharmacies up and running, particularly for people who have chronic illnesses that need to access chronic medication. Because obviously now what this would mean is that we would have a situation where a whole lot or hundreds of thousands of people are unable to access the chronic medication. So can the minister just shed some light on this? Because with centralized communications now only coming from the presidency, it is important on our side to get an understanding on what are the plans in particular to try and get those particular pharmacies or healthcare facilities up and running, and concrete plans at that. Then it would be interesting to understand from Dr. Crisp in particular, the projections in terms of the projections are from the various unrest that we've had. We've obviously seen large gatherings taking place. Some of the gatherings took place over 2 weeks ago. We saw large gatherings in KZN. We saw large gatherings in Pretoria, in Tshwane, several weeks ago. So we just get an understanding of what the projections are in terms of the increase in infections. And also particularly looking at the fact that there's been large movements of people, not just within provinces, but across provincial lines, because I think that will be quite important to understand. And also in particular, what the contingency plans are to help deal with the infections that we might see, and how is there a targeted approach to try and get an accelerated vaccine program, particularly from those provinces in Gauteng, KZN in particular. And then the other question and the last question that I've got to pose is, I saw in the presentation, Dr. Crisp's presentation, the fact that over 60% of healthcare workers are fully inoculated. And of course, one of the things that the department has, you know, made a commitment for months ago was that there were 1.2 people working in the healthcare sector, many of which they would like to have inoculated before we even began inoculating the rest of the other age groups or the other high risk group categories. Now, with just this low number, in my view, over 60% is quite low. So what then is the plan? I mean, and also what is the cause of this? Is it vaccine hesitancy? Is it access? What is the issue, and why are we not able to bring this number a little bit higher? I would have assumed at least 80%, making room for those people who choose not to get vaccinated. And so I would like to understand what the plan is. And then lastly, the categorization of people has often changed, Minister and your team, because there was then a focus on people with comorbidities, there was always going to be a focus on people, those people who are incarcerated. There were various focus plans. And then that was changed, where then the teachers and the members of the SAPS were brought on board. And so what is now currently the order of prioritization? What are we looking at? I mean, we know that the over 35s are now being targeted, but what is the, according to the science and those who are most at risk, where are we in terms of targeting people with comorbidities? How is this going to work? Because it seems as though the initial strategy has now been tossed away, and they seemingly is just now moving down a list of people according to age, and there isn't seemingly a plan around particularly some people who are still higher risk, who may not fall within the categories that are being inoculated at the moment, especially people in who are being incarcerated and various other high risk spaces. Thank you.
Masengwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me again greet the minister and her group. First of all, I must say to the minister my deepest condolences to the ANC and to you, minister, for the passing away of Mrs. Maluleke and her husband. Sorry for that. I have two or three clarity-seeking questions. Minister, if you can tell us if the department has information on whether any people who have been fully vaccinated have been admitted to hospitals with COVID-19. And if so, how many and in which age group do they fall? Remember, I'm asking this question for clarity. Whether South Africa is at risk of more infection from vaccinated population, like what is happening in the US and the UK? And if so, whether any step has been taken to minimize such infection among vaccinated people? What is the department doing to minimize such doubts and encourage people to go get vaccinated? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation from the minister and also from the team led of the department. Thanks, Dr. Crisp, for the presentation. Just a few clarity-seeking questions, Honorable Minister. The first one is around your targets, Honorable Minister, in terms of vaccination. What is the picture? Are you meeting your targets? And if not, is there any plan to make sure that you are reaching your targets? The second one, Honorable Minister, in as far as vaccines that have expired, are we having vaccines that have expired? And if so, what are you doing with those vaccines that have expired? Then, Honorable Minister, I'm very happy to hear that the National Department of Health is intervening in provinces that are not doing very well in as far as vaccination coverage is concerned. That is a good thing. I'm really happy to hear that. Then the third question, Honorable Minister, it's around the uninsured population. I hope my assumption might not be wrong, because I might assume that most of those uninsured population are most of our people that comes from the villages and your far-flung areas in provinces. My question will be, what is the department doing to make sure that we are reaching out to those people in the villages, in the far-flung areas, The Limpopo experience, for instance, is a very good one, where they go out and reach out to those people that are in the villages. Then the last question, Honorable Minister, is around, it's related to the one asked by Honorable Kwagube. Are we still having outstanding healthcare workers or frontline workers that have not yet come forward to be vaccinated? And if so, what is the plan to make sure that we still cover those healthcare and frontline workers? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Acting Minister of Health, for your presentation together with your team. I also have a set of questions here that I would like appraisal from the NDOH and the Minister. Firstly, there was a Sinovac representative that was on Power FM last week, I think on the 16th of July, who stated that the department has not honored their commitment with Sinovac on the delivering of vaccines. I want to hear from the minister, what is the commitment or the agreement with Sinovac and the NDOH in regards to the delivery of the 2.5 million vaccines and the 7.5 subsequently following that? And what is the reason, noting the fact that we are in dire, desperate need of vaccines, that the NDOH, the Department of Health and the minister have not honored their commitment with Sinovac to date? And secondly, there were also reports of the fact that there's been a delay in relation to the delivery of J&J vaccines. Can the minister please appraise us with the reasons for this, what the intervention is, and how this has affected the rollout in the places you have predominantly prioritized the rollout of J&J Johnson in rural areas, for example, like you have said yourself. And how has this affected the vaccination process so far? Number three, there's also been a report that media personnel have been cleared, so journalists have been cleared for vaccination. But my concern is that, and this is something that I think has been raised already, that what about persons with comorbidities? I feel like we are digressing further and further away from the World Health Organization guidelines on prioritizing persons for the rollout. So what is the reason behind prioritizing a desktop writer over someone who has cerebral palsy, for example, cashiers, petrol attendants, who should also be prioritized as frontline workers? I mean, it's sad that we're having this conversation because we are scrambling for vaccines to begin with. So I'm not saying journalists are not important or any of that, but I mean, the fact that we're scrambling for vaccines to begin with is something that falls squarely on your feet as the sixth administration under the leadership of President Ramaphosa. And number four, why hasn't the department, so SAPRA was here earlier on, and they state that they have not heard or have not received any complaints in regard to the use of surgical mesh complications. I mean, there's been developments on this conversation because it turns out that SAPRA misled the portfolio committee. Upindile Mube, the person that I've been in contact with the Minister of Health, has told me that she has been in constant communication with SAPRA and has raised the issue of the use of surgical mesh complications with them. So they misled the committee today, effectively lying in the portfolio committee in regards to them not having ever received a communication with regards to the complications of surgical mesh, the fact that other countries are doing surgical removal for free, like Australia, New Zealand, and Scotland, for example, and that in South Africa it's still being mainstreamed and still being used, especially transvaginal surgical mesh and hernia surgical mesh. So I want to know why the department hasn't informed SAPRA of this particular global phenomenon, which is very important. There are litigation cases against the Department of Health, and yet you have not informed the regulatory body on the effects. The fact that they have been informed is another conversation altogether that I will raise with them once again for lying in the portfolio committee earlier today. And number five, I would like an update on the Kikapela pharmaceutical company. I'm asking this because of the fact that we've seen reports of the fact that BioVac will be producing E-Pfizer as from next year, 2022. I want to know What then is the status of the of our own state-owned pharmaceutical company, and why it is unable to do this particular service? And just the general circumstance or situation regarding our state-owned pharmaceutical company. And number six, the issue of privatizing delivery and inoculation was always going to compromise the poor. We raised this a long time ago to the NDOH. The fact that privatizing delivery and vaccination to private companies was going to compromise the poor because they don't have immediate access to these facilities. Hence, we called for the capacitating of state-owned facilities and state state health facilities. This has not happened in the way that you have outsourced such services to private companies, who have then obviously done what a private company will do, and that is prioritize their cohort to the 10% population in the country, and not necessarily the rest of the 80% of people who are also part of the system, because that is the modus operandi. So I find it a bit disingenuous for the NDOH to come bring this as a problem that now arises, when it was flagged to you way prior to even the tendering process to Clicks and Dis-Chem and all of that. We already said to you, even released a statement as the EFF in regards to this particular thing, that outsourcing such services pertaining to public health, especially when there's the whole process of nationalization of the vaccine process, is gonna compromise the poor and people living in township, informal areas and rural areas. So it's a bit disingenuous to hear this today in July from the NDOH, that all of a sudden you now see what we are saying. You were already told by this portfolio committee, and you did not make amends to ensure that you already do something with the foresight that this portfolio committee had already given to you. And lastly, I want to ask for an update in relation to Sinopharm. This is in also, you can link the two questions to the Sinovac one at the top, because SAPRA did say that Sinovac and Sinopharm have been approved. I want to know, because I know that the engagements between the NDOH and Sinopharm were at a very high level in February. So I want to know what the update is. Did you decide to no longer go with Sinopharm in favor of Pfizer and J&J? And what then is the situation now, noting the approval of both these vaccines and the fact that you failed to deliver on a commitment you made to one of the manufacturing companies? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Let me just confirm. Yeah, Honorable Gela, yes.
Thank you, Dinangwe. I don't have a question, Chair, but I want to welcome the report from the department and also from the minister. We really appreciate this report, and also we know that what happened last week. But I must say, because I'm also residing in Gauteng, I've seen that the program is continuing in our province. And I'm saying, keep it up, the good work, Minister, with your team. And thank you very much for updating us as a portfolio, so that at least we know what is happening on the ground. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Any other members left out?
Chair President, there's just one question that I left out.
Go ahead, Honorable Kwakhube. Okay. Yes.
I just wanted to have an understanding, Chair, because I mean, what is the current supply of vaccines that is in the country at the moment? Because I think that will guide in terms of what we are able to deliver on. So there isn't quite a sense of, you know, while all these vaccinations are happening, but what is left almost in the ticky? And also then, you know, what other consignments are we waiting to receive? Thank you.
Any other member would like to come in? Okay.
Honorable Ismail, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Ismail.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry that I have raised my hand very late. I just have a few questions. My first question is, I'm very curious to understand the phrases that the department is using now. We note we have reached age groups now 35 and above. Now, I'm very much concerned as there are special need people, inclusive of children, and when I say children, I mean 15, 16, 17, 18, with comorbidities that are at high risk if they are not vaccinated as a matter of priority. When I say special needs, I mean they fall into the category of people with disabilities, et cetera, where they need caregivers to take care of themselves. And I'm just worried with the pace that we are doing now with vaccinations, although we are increasing steadily. I mean, when are we going to be reaching these special need people? Secondly, I noticed some healthcare workers are having difficulty registering on the healthcare workers registration system. I have escalated this or quite a few of these to the department, the National Department of Health, and while on a one-on-one basis they've been assisted, I just want to know how is the department going to address this, because this may be one of the reasons why, you know, all our healthcare workers that want to be inoculated has not as yet been, you know, vaccinated. My third question, I'm also asking, when will caregivers of these special needs children be vaccinated, as they would fall into the category of educators or caregivers? And while they are not, you know, educators as such, you know, we have situations where there are homes and there are caregivers that come to these special needs children to take care of them, and they are somewhat left behind. And my last question is, when will pregnant women not falling into the category of 35 upwards be vaccinated? Because I would, you know, I would think that they are also at risk at this point of time. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any other member? Okay, if not, thank you very much for the presentation and the opening comments of the Minister. Minister, in your opening remarks, you made mention of a call on if any of our members of the society come across contaminated or medicines that are just found out there on the black market. You also are saying rightfully that those medicines may be contaminated. Maybe you can also help us so that we can be an extension of what we are saying. What are you saying members of the society should do if they come across anyone bringing those contaminated, those medicines that are out there, probably looted from elsewhere, that no one would know what type of a medicine is this, where does it come from? What should members of the society do? That will assist us also so that we could then support the message that we are putting forward. I wanted to also ask the question that was asked by Honorable Kwakube, but I think the first one is to make a correction there. The vaccinated public healthcare workers, percentage vaccinated is 76%, and the percentage fully vaccinated is 58.6, so it's almost close to 69-70%. So it is quite a pretty high number, but nevertheless, one would still wish that we get them all vaccinated, or they get exposed to all of us. What's the projection timeline to maybe deal with the balance of these 24% other workers? Or maybe you will probably not get, you think you will never get 100%, maybe rightfully so, for what Honorable Kwakube was saying, other members of the society are probably reluctant to go through that process. The other matter, Honorable Minister, is what actually might be in the back of our minds, is to, as we are advancing these programs, getting vaccines, rolling out vaccines, are we still taking on board other programs that we supposed to carry on? Because your department is a department of all other programs, including this one focusing, I mean, including within just the infectious disease. When this pandemic hit us, we were already dealing with the quadruple burden of disease, HIV and TB, maternal death, non-communicable disease, violence and trauma. Do we still find time to pull these programs with us as we go along? Or maybe some of them are left behind. By the time we go back and pick them up, we might face challenges. It may just be nice to check and see if you still do find time to look at those programs and get them moving also. May I take this one back now to the minister and her team for responses to the questions asked by the honorable members.
Chairperson, thank you. I will conclude after other members of the team has responded. So I'll start with Dr. Fritz, the DJ and DM, and then I'll come through.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Minister. I'll try to go through them as quickly as I can. There are a lot of questions and see what we can, how we can manage. The damage in the past week or 10 days, the estimated number of missed vaccinations is around about 250,000 based on what the provinces were vaccinating prior to the disruptions. The actual loss of doses of vaccine, as the minister said, we're still getting reports in, but it looks like it's around 25,000 doses that have been lost, either stolen or destroyed. In terms of the infrastructure and the ability to deliver, as we heard from the Honorable Garube, there were a large number of pharmacies, private pharmacies that were damaged. Not all of those were vaccination centers, but obviously it's still of concern to us because that's where many patients get their other medications. One bulk store that had some of these 25,000 vaccines in was also completely gutted and emptied. And those are the medicines that the Honorable Chair was mentioning just now that we are concerned about. They get into some kind of illicit market and people might try to buy them. So the other medicines was a substantial, probably for the private sector, could be as much as a third of the medicines that were in the province, in the storage part of the province that have been lost. So obviously to recover that is going to take some time. The loss of the vaccines is not huge, but obviously every lost vaccine is a lost opportunity to vaccinate. So the projections of the impact on the transmission for the third wave is anybody's guess. The modelers have looked at it to see. We do expect that it will tip up for the very reasons the Honorable Garube has mentioned, that we will see a second hump. We don't know how big it will be or when to expect it, but should be probably within 7 to 10 days after people were milling around together and transmitting the vaccine, the virus. The healthcare workers, I'll address it here. So a lot of healthcare workers do not register as healthcare workers when they get vaccinated. They may just be as part of the general population. The only portion of the healthcare workers that we can actually measure confidently now is the public sector healthcare workers, because we can use the personal number and ID to correlate whether the public healthcare workers have been vaccinated or not. And it's the 24% that have not come for vaccination is obviously a target we would want to continue to work on. But we do understand that people do have hesitancy even if they work in the health system. And it's going to take real hard work to get to the remainder. For the healthcare workers that are not part of the public service, there is a portal that is open to them. We had to close the original portal because thousands of people were registering just off the general public, and we were unable to know whether those people were legitimate public health legitimate health workers. So there is a long list that was published some months ago of the expanded definition of healthcare workers, and that's what makes up the balance to the 1.2 million. What we have recorded on the system as healthcare workers is just over 900,000 vaccinations of people who have declared themselves as healthcare workers. So it's the portion in the public sector and those that are in the private sector. So we obviously still have a way to go to get the remainder of people in the sector, but it could be around about 300,000 that we are actually looking for still. And we would encourage those people to come forward and be vaccinated. The categorization of people. So there's a lot of evidence now, and it has been shown even on this platform before by Dr. Anban Pillay, that the age is the single most predictable factor for severe infection and hospitalization, by far more than any comorbidity. And that's been presented from with international evidence and with evidence from South Africa of us tracking what is going on, work that was done in the NHLS, NICD. And it showed us that everybody over the age of 50 as cohorts are more vulnerable than even people with comorbidities. And even the population 40 plus, many people in that cater are more vulnerable than people with comorbidities. And so the challenge really is to go as, and we've learned this from other countries too, is to go as fast as possible and not to burden the rollout program with a lot of administratively difficult things to administer in a vaccination program. You also impede on people's privacy when you start asking them in a public place to prove that they have a comorbidity, and it's very easy to defraud the paperwork anyway. So it becomes an absolute administrative nightmare with people pointing fingers at one another. The challenge is to get to as many people as fast as possible. And that's why we've opened up now to 35 pluses. And in due course, as soon as that program is running, I'm sure there will be an announcement of how we're going to deal with the last cohort. The current supply of vaccines, the last question from Honorable Garube, is that yesterday morning, so we've done quite a substantial number of vaccinations during the course of the day. I'm sure the minister will report on that in a minute. But as of yesterday, we had 2.68 million doses combined of Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer in the country, which is, at the rate that we are going at the moment, is about 15 days of stock. And we are expecting another 900,000 over the weekend if all goes according to plan. But we have a pipeline planned from early August, which is over 5.6 million doses of Pfizer, and hopefully the Johnson & Johnson vaccine should be the first delivery should arrive in that week. But we won't hold our breaths until we actually see that it's arrived. But we do believe that is now all unlocked and going to flow. So I think for the first time, we have line of sight of a lot of vaccine from now until the end of October. And we are confident that we can scale up as fast as possible, and we're not going to run out of vaccine. So the next one's questions from Honorable Tengwa. Fully vaccinated people admitted, we don't have an accurate figure of that. We get anecdotal reports as well, but there's a team from the NICD that is busy investigating the reports. And what they do is they then correlate the ID numbers of people who are reported admitted in hospital against the vaccination status in the EVDS. And as soon as we have that, the data is available by age group as well. As soon as we have managed to do that correlation, we'll be able to supply the information. So there are people at risk of infection from, is South Africa at risk of infection from vaccinated population? Yes, the vaccinated population still remains at risk. And what we do about it is we continue to advise people, as is the global requirement, to continue to wear your mask, continue with washing hands and with social distance. Just because you're vaccinated doesn't mean you can't be infected and can't carry the virus. We know that is possible, but fortunately it's likely to be a mild infection. But it means we still have to have the non-pharmaceutical interventions to protect all of us. We do have a program. We have, together with the GCIS, a program to provide information to the public and where they can go to myths-busting a site and can find the information. And we just need to publish that more so that everybody knows where to find it. The Honorable Sakatwa, the targets, are we meeting our targets? Yes, at the moment, we are definitely meeting our targets. Our target was to be at 250,000 per day by the end of this week. And last week, our target was 200,000. We got to 191,000 last week, but this week we have exceeded the 250,000 target on a day. So we are confident that the program is scaling up at the anticipated level. We've also been comparing ourselves with all the other from programs around the world, and we know that relative to other countries, our scale-up is competing very well. We rank somewhere around number 52 out of 255 countries on our current scale up. So we're very happy, and it's inspiring us to move faster. We have had no vaccines expired yet. No, that's not quite correct. There was one small batch that was provided to a private hospital group to vaccinate in a mining community. And some of those vaccines, one tray was did expire. So we are aware of that one. But what normally happens is we monitor, we know the expiry dates, and it's declared on the stock visibility system. And when we see that vaccines are getting close to an expiry date, we move them to the high volume area so that we can use them in advance of their expiry. That's a normal process that the pharmacists are engaged in. And there was just that one error some weeks ago. The uninsured population. So what's fascinating about the uninsured population is that the ones that are we finding the most difficult to get to are in fact in the urban areas and around townships and informal settlements around cities, not so much the rural areas. As I showed in the data that I presented, the Limpopo and Eastern Cape are doing incredibly well in vaccinating their uninsured population, including in the rural areas. It's urban areas where it seems to be more difficult to mobilize people to come. We do believe that the younger population is more likely to engage, and time will tell whether we're right. And we would like to appeal to the younger population to motivate and bring their parents and grandparents with them for vaccinations. We don't know why the remaining population of the healthcare workers don't come forward, but we've got no reason to suspect it's any different from the general population who do have fears. Some have religious reasons they don't want to be vaccinated. There have been studies done by other parties outside of the health department that have been published recently, including the quarterly reports that come from the HSRC and various universities. There will always be a portion of people who are just not don't want to be vaccinated. Honorable Chira's questions about Sinovac. Sinovac has a conditional registration with SAHPRA. And that goes through a process now, and there's a committee in the department that looks at all essential medicines. A recommendation is from there, goes into the procurement process. And so that is what's followed for all medicines and all vaccines, and it is in that process at the moment. And the company has been in touch with us in the past week, so hopefully that will be expedited. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine situation has been restored. I think we all know what happened abroad with the stock that was coming from outside of the country, but we believe we're on top of that now, and the company has started to provide us with schedules of delivery dates. The question of who gets vaccinated in what order and whether one chooses journalists or others and comorbidities, I hope I answered the question earlier, that actually it's age-related. That is the main thing, is to get to the age-related, the older population first. And now our major challenge is to open up as fast as possible and to get to a stage where we are doing a million doses every 3 days so that everybody can be seen. BioVac is in fact a partly state-owned company as well. I know that we are referring to the state-owned pharmaceutical company. A pharmaceutical company is not the same as a vaccine manufacturer. It's quite a different process with biologicals. So both of those companies are very relevant to our sustainable pharmaceutical supplies in the country. And it's not either or. We need both of them. And we are very happy that BioVac has passed the test, and WHO and the other partner companies are happy that they have the capability of manufacturing in South Africa for our continent. It's not an either or, we need them both. Just a clarification on the privatizing of delivery. There was no tender. We don't go out on tender for private facilities to deliver vaccination programs. We want every single possible health professional who's allowed to vaccinate to be available for vaccination of everybody. And the agreement with all the private providers is that all sites, whether they are private pharmacies or whether they're part of the public health program, must be available for vaccinating both the insured and the uninsured. the issue around how they get a head start is because of the location, that there are many private facilities that are located in communities who are insured. It's because of their front shops and the other stuff that they sell that makes their businesses viable. And that's the same in the whole health service, that we need to have the public health sector concentrating on the population who doesn't have access to this kinds of services. Again, we don't want either or. We want all, every single possible vaccination capability to add to the capacity so we can get to more people quicker. There was a question asked by Honorable Ismail about the prioritization of special needs children under the age of 18. We don't have any vaccine in South Africa that's registered for use in people under the age of 18. That's not to say it will always be like that, but our vaccines are on an emergency release condition like for the WHO has in other countries, and they are not currently licensed for using under the age of 18. The officially registering with the portal that's available, that can be brought to our attention because there shouldn't be problems still with healthcare workers accessing the portal. We do know that many healthcare workers who are of the age categories have gone on their own to get vaccinated and have not gone through a healthcare worker portal, but we then can't count that number as a healthcare worker. We just know anecdotally that they tell us they have gone and got vaccinated. But there should be no problem at all with people registering. And when those come to our attention, we deal with them immediately. The caregivers of special needs children and all special care environments are dealt with under our congregate settings program. So if any of those have still been missed, we need to know about them so that we can bring them to the attention of the provincial health departments who are running those congregate setting programs. We are under the impression we have already dealt with congregate settings, but if there are any, we'd be happy to do that. The vaccination of pregnant women, there has been a circular out of when in pregnancy it is safe or not safe or recommended or not recommended for vaccination. And there are some pregnant women over the age of 35 who are being vaccinated. And that's another reason why we need to move as rapidly as possible to vaccinate this group so that we can open the group between 18 and 34 and cover more of those people. The last question that I can answer from the chair was around, are other services going in? Yes, most certainly they're going on, but we will not deny they are impacted by the large number of staff who are working on the vaccination program, but the chronic medicines and other programs are still continuing across the provinces. Chair Minister, I'll leave my contributions there.
Thank you very much, Dr. Crisp. Good evening to the Honorable Chair, my minister and my deputy minister, honorable members. Dr. Crisp has covered most of the questions, but I'd like just to add that with Sinovac, we've never had any commitment. If there was any commitment, it would have been signed by my office as the authorized signature of the department. So we don't have any agreement. It's now that our internal committee is processing the matter, and then we will take the next steps once they give us a green light on what to do as it pertains to Sinovac. I think the next issue I wanted to stress is that, yes, BioVac is 47% owned by the state, and there is a possibility that before the end of this year, of course, through Department of Science and Innovation, the state might be a majority shareholder at BioVac. Other than that, I really think Dr. Crisp has done justice and answered most of the questions. But maybe the one I just need to quickly touch on is the issue of the surgical mesh. It will be very difficult to comment on this one because we're not party of the meeting with SAPRA where this matter was discussed. We will probably need to follow up and find out what the issues were as it relates to the issue of the surgical mesh. Thank you very much. I'll take it back to my minister and deputy minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a few comments from my side. I think the team has dealt with almost all the questions. Just a comment, just to add on, I think the issue of Honorable Chira on Kitapila, that that project is still ongoing under the Department of Science and Innovation with our support. The whole of government continues to support, but it's a complex matter which is managed in that department because government alone cannot go into a manufacturing of medicines alone. So as far as we know, the Science and Innovation Department is continue to talk to various manufacturers to look at the possible partnerships and also working also with the National Treasury and the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition to see, to look at models in terms of how this could be managed once there is some suitors who they could be able to agree with. In terms of, I think Dr. Chris dealt with the fact that we definitely are not engaged in any privatization of services. There is a joint working relationship with a number of private providers. They've done quite a good job in terms of adding additional capacity. In the initial period, they focused on the insured until there was an agreement with the finalization of an agreement with the department through which, because when they do the insured, they get their reimbursement of the vaccines which they pay for from when they receive the vaccines from BioVac, they do pay for them. And there had to be finalization of the reimbursement when they do public uninsured recipients. And this is now finalized, and therefore also uninsured South Africans are also receiving services from these private providers. That's why it's important for us to continue. So when there is a destruction of private pharmacies, it does affect our ability to provide services. I think over and above that, I think maybe the DG just forgot to mention also that as far as we are aware, Sinopharm has not yet met the requirements with the SAPRA. So that is not correct to say that the Sinopharm also has already been approved by SAPRA. Again, just to add on the question of the Chairperson, Honorable Jomo, that indeed, as much as we're trying by all means to make sure that no services are left behind, the pressure of the work of containment of the COVID-19, especially, you know, all the work which has to be done, caring for those who are infected, all the work in terms of screening and also isolation and quarantine, all those, including now the vaccination, quite a lot of that requires health professionals and therefore, and also the fact that our health services do get overwhelmed from time to time with all these second and third waves. So we all wishing that as we push the vaccination, hopefully by the time we reach the 70%, hopefully latest by January next year, if not by December, we will reap the fruits of less infections and less severe illness. In which case many of our health workers will then be released to continue to provide comprehensive health care. But at the current moment, we try by all means to make sure that we don't lose a lot of ground in terms of your non-communicable diseases and also other chronic illnesses like your HIV and AIDS and also tuberculosis and malaria. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Minister, before you come in, may I take another hand of the follow-up from Honorable Chirwa?
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I feel like my questions are not being answered in how I am asking them. Firstly, I asked of the status of Ketlapela pharmaceutical company, like what is its current status as a state-owned pharmaceutical company? Is it operating? How is it operating? Did it cease operating? When did it cease operating? I want a diagnosis of Ketlapela. And also on the issue of Sinovac, maybe it's an issue of semantics. Sinovac offered South Africa 10 million vaccines, 2.5 immediately as procurement happened. I'm asking, why has South Africa, the NGO, as a Minister of Health, aware of the good relations between China and South Africa, not yet have taken up this offer, knowing that Sinovac has prioritized South Africa because of the BRICS relationship with SA? So I'm asking why the VMAC, the South African Ministerial Advisory Committee on Vaccines, what is the update in relation to the particular 2.5 million vaccines that are available on demand, not yet been taken up for so long? After, and the fact that you are responding about what has happened this week or what's going to happen this week does not suffice, unfortunately. I want to know what has caused the delay so far. Is it because the VMAC committee did not meet? Is it because you were still procuring J&J vaccines, which are delayed and have not yet been submitted and delivered, despite the fact that there is a pharmaceutical company that is saying, we will give you 2.5 million vaccines immediately? Why haven't you taken up that offer to date? And why are you waiting on J&J, which is also delaying dates on when they will deliver vaccines? You don't even have the dates for us or the public. But there is a manufacturing company that's saying, we'll give you immediately, and you're not taking that up. So obviously this brings us back to the issue of the bias, which we've told you about countless times, that we are picking up an issue of biasness in favor of J&J over other vaccine manufacturers. And this is a blatant example of such a thing, that Sinovac is saying, we'll give you immediately. J&J, you've procured, they don't even know the date of when they will deliver them. You don't know the date. You have not made them public to us, and you are asking about the date. They're not giving us the date of what and the reason of what's causing this delay. And furthermore, on top of that, why have you delayed procuring Sinovac vaccines, knowing we are in dire, desperate need of those vaccines as a country, and we have prioritization from Sinovac? You've been crying about the fact that there's a whole, the Western world taking ownership or making it hard for African countries to procure vaccines. Now there's a manufacturing company that's offering you 2.5 million vaccines immediately. You know about it. And you are still not procuring it, but you're waiting on J&J, and you don't even have the date for that. So I'm asking about the reason, what has taken you that long? And another thing, in relation to Sinopharm, I'm asking, because you were at advanced stages in February, what is the update today? I would really like for my questions to be answered in the way that I'm asking them. And if there's an issue of clarity, please raise that so that I can also clarify, like I'm doing now with a follow-up. That's all. Just answer those questions. Why?
Yeah, department officials, before the minister comes in.
No, it's fine. I'll go ahead, Chair. Just leave it.
Okay.
I think the first thing that I need to clear, Honorable Chima, if there's a donation, as the Minister of Health, I will receive the letter. I've had bilateral meetings with the Chinese ambassador in South Africa. There's not been such. So just to explain in terms of the protocol, how
I didn't say anything about donations. I said they have 2.5 million vaccines available immediately. But don't misquote me because you're changing
Honorable
the entire context.
Honorable Chirwa, you don't interject because the minister would have interjected while you were speaking. He didn't. So you also do the same. We don't interject.
I'm
wait
sorry,
for her.
And I'll just clarify because it's important for this conversation.
No.
I don't want to be misquoted.
You wait for
so
the
I'm clarifying. Wait until I finish so that you can understand.
You wait for the response and only then you come in.
Honorable Chiro, there is no offer. In terms of, that's why I'm starting from a donation, because I'm clarifying this. You are not the first person who's made this public comment, because there's quite a lot of misinformation. So portfolio committee meetings are not only for you as members of parliament, but we must clarify broadly issues. So the first issue is that when Sinovac has been conditionally approved by the regulator, From that, it goes to VMAC, which needs to give us an update in terms of advice to say this is what all other vaccines have been going through. So we have not firstly received a final advice from VMAC, and I've urged them to say they need to understand the agency of the matter so that we can receive an advice. That's the first thing. Following that, that's when we take that into the process in NCCC to say this is the advice we have received based on the efficacy of the vaccine, based on the data that we receive. And then out of that, that's where the team led by the DG then kicks in terms of the processes. So you cannot say that we are sitting with information that are not processing the vaccine, whether it's by offer, whether it's by donation, because many people have been moving from offer to donation, changing of ways. That's why I'm responding to both either. So that we clarify in terms of the process of donation, we also clarify in terms of the process of an offer. Remember, even that, it has to be in terms of the how we have explained the contracts, how we have explained the procurement process. So that's the issue. I think there's quite a lot of misinformation that almost suggests that from the department point of view, there is a deliberate action to stall, nor not to procure from certain vaccines, which I want to dispel here and now. We are desperate for vaccine. We want to vaccinate everybody, inoculate everyone in the country and more numbers. As you see, for example, today we've surpassed our 250,000 mark. Now let's drive and want to drive towards 300,000 today. What we are interested in is to have a security of supply of the vaccine. Now, where we sit, because we have put a process, we must never, because if tomorrow we are seen to have maybe given a preferential treatment towards a pharmaceutical that is said to be aligned to us ideologically and being a friend to South Africa, we'll be accused of putting the lives of South Africans at risk and putting our friendship higher. So it's very important for us to be consistent and follow the process. We have committed to the portfolio last time we were here. We asked also for SAPRA to explain the process that they are engaging in. And we've also updating to say, this is where we are. I can assure you, the minute we get this process, because we are not biased to one vaccine or to two vaccines, we just need the vaccines that are going to help save South Africans. That's where we are. The minute we get that, we'll start working. And we are looking, we've been receiving, asking questions from VMAC to say, give us an update on this as soon as you are done. And they have assured us that they are doing the work. So that's the first thing. On Gitlapin, Honorable Chief, that's why DM said it's not under the Department of Health. So one of the things as courtesy is that you do not absorb, you do not take the responsibility of other departments. So we could respond generally as part of government, but that question would be best answered by Minister Nzimande, who is the custodian under Department of Science and Innovation, who is the responsible person to lead this program. So I think it will be unfair to expect us from health to give you details of where and why and how Gitlapila is and, you know, all those details when it's not within our ambit as a responsibility. In terms of J&J, yes, Honorable Member, there was a delay in getting a schedule of delivery from J&J. But I can confirm now that we have received the schedule and we are expecting, as Dr. Crisp has explained, the number of vaccines that we're expecting by next week latest. So based on the issues, when I got into the portfolio, one of the things that we had done was I had to write to both J&J and to Pfizer to commit to a schedule with dates of delivery, not estimates that are saying within this quarter, because initially we had to say, this is what amount of doses that will be delivered per quarter. And now we went to say, for proper planning And for us to be able to know that we can be able to roll out our vaccine program at what pace, at what speed, at what level, we need to have the dates on site. Part even of what we are talking about is that the vaccines must be front loaded so that we can be able to ensure that we do not have a delay nor disruption in terms of our vaccine rollout. So we can confirm, honorable members, that we have received the both the schedules from J&J as explained by Dr. Chris and also from Pfizer. On Sinopharm, where we are sitting, we've not received indication from the regulator that Sinopharm has been approved, unless if I'm missing that. So that's the explanation, Honorable Chira, in terms of in detail explaining where we are sitting with the issues in terms of responses. In terms of caregivers, Honorable Ishmael, caregivers fall under ECDs. When we opened this week for both registration and vaccination of ECDs under social development, it's not only for private, for public sector, it includes private sector. So they need to register, reach out to social development or the sites that are closer. If you need that details, I know that from social development, they've been able to provide those, and that's where they can be able to vaccinate. So that's the issue. The issue around priorities, I think Honorable Ishmael spoke about. We are saying from the Department of Health, when we started the process and the program of vaccination, we had plans. We put these plans, and as we put the plans, and we started delivering on these plans, it was very clear that certain things that we thought we could do would be practically impossible for us to be able to implement. And that's what necessitated us to go back to the drawing board and start reviewing what we have put in place. Now, firstly, around the issues of comorbidities, we would have wanted to prioritize, for example, citizens, all citizens across ages, of comorbidities. Now, when we went and started rolling out and engaging with the practitioners on the ground, it was very clear that it would be difficult to be able to say, this is how you identify a person with comorbidities. Where do you start? Where do you end? Similarly, again, the issue of sectoral. We started with it. We've started this week. We've evaluated with the ones that we have started. And now we are realizing that there's quite a huge amount of administration that you have to put in place, almost about 4 weeks of work, depending on whether that sector has a reliable data to be able to give you so that you can know how you are going to identify those people, how you are going to verify if they exist in that sector, and then also ensure that you upload them because you must know where you are going to find them, so that you allocate them closer to where they are. So it's quite a lot of administration work. Now, as we look at this pilot that we ran, or teams that we ran, or cohorts that you can utilize that we ran, we realized that it is not in our interest as the Department of Health to roll out this way. It's not efficient, it's not effective. It's actually time consuming, and it actually removes us from ensuring that we can move in terms of mass rollout and ensuring that we can get the numbers that we want. So part of what we are looking at now is to say, are we able to go back to the IMC, which we haven't, we'll go tomorrow, and perhaps convince and appeal to the IMC to say, can we collapse the approach towards sectors and other categories, but focus on rolling out the age population cohort, the next one. And also say, because from where we are sitting, we believe that that's the most efficient way of rolling out. It's less administrative in terms of preparation, but it also removes the burden of saying, who do you prioritize first before who and why? Because that's where we are. Like Honorable Chira was talking that there is a call for media personnel to come through, and others will say the religious sector, and others will say the retail sector, as others would say you know, the people who are in the station, in the petrol stations, petrol attendants, others would say, this ones, those who are. So you are having quite a number. And others would say within the municipalities, you've got those who are dealing with services. Now, as we look at this, to be able to have, for example, let's take an example of retail. Yes, they are frontline because they have to work, interact with customers every day. How do you get, where do you get the data from? And what method are you going to use to capture their data and verify them? Are you not going to risk making sure that you get those who are within the formal retail and leaving the ones who are in the informal retail space? So those are the things that we are learning as we roll out this program. And we are trying to find mechanisms that will be inclusive and ensure equitable spread of the vaccine across, but giving each and every South African an equal opportunity where they want to be vaccinated. So that's where we are talking about, honorable members, and you pardon us. If you find us having to change certain things that we've said to you, this is what. We will come back, as I said previously, to account to say, members, we've moved here, and these are the reasons why we moved, because we are interested in ensuring that we improve continuously the pace of vaccination as we have been doing. And we really appreciate even the practitioners on the ground who continue to give us feedback to say, this will work, this will not work. Also citizens who go on site and tell us feedback to say, this we found it easy, or this one we found it a bit difficult, and we are suggesting the following, because that's what has been happening. So that's where we are, honorable members, in terms of the work that we've been doing. I think quite a number of questions and answers have been provided. But again, the other issue that we need to, which is popular now, rising, I'm not so sure what has caused that, the anti-vaxxers coming up. I think one of the things, Chairperson and honorable members, one has to continuously emphasize. It is a democratic right for a South African if they decide to say, I am not going to be vaccinated. We will not force, we've taken a decision that we don't force people to take the vaccine. But we appeal to South Africans, if you've taken a decision that you are not going to vaccinate, respect other people's decision and democratic rights to choose to vaccinate. We are seeing quite a lot growing in terms of the issues around people with side effects or severe effects that are picking up after vaccine, or even the emphasizing the issue around those who get hospitalized. I think both sides will find people sharing stories. The issue we must continuously emphasize is that when you vaccinate, it doesn't mean that you are not going to get COVID-19. That's what we must emphasize, colleagues. It means that it reduces the severity of you being sick or even potentially dying. So we need to be very clear in our messaging. That's why the non-pharmaceutical interventions remains important. But secondly, those who have had side effects, we continue to say, especially the severe ones, or somebody who suspects that somebody might have died after having taken the vaccine. We encourage them to report so that a proper analysis and an investigation can be done and assist us with more data in order for us to make conclusive remarks and for the scientists to be able to make conclusion, proper conclusions. We continue to provide information, and you'd remember previously when we had one of our media briefings, we had Dr. Gray, who came to present the findings in terms of investigation about what has happened. And what we want to caution again, we are seeing again the rise of fake news, the rise of fake posts. And we appeal to South Africans to be cautious, because some of the people who are anti-vaxxers or anti-vaccines tend to create fake posters in terms of discouraging people to taking vaccines. So we ask South Africans to verify, reach out, even if it means you take a walk to a nearest health facility just to get information, please do so, so that we can be able to make sure that we have information. On our website as the department, There are frequently asked questions with answers. Please reach out into our website. You'll get more information about this, where you can see the questions that you have. It is continuously being updated. We will do our best as well as the department to continuously, as we do our media briefings, to inform the public of the dangers or even the cautions that they need to do. I know that some of the people were asking about, should I take the vaccine after I've tested positive? What are the dates? We provide that information consistently. So we are just urging people to make sure that they have the right information so that they can take decisions correct. When you go to the vaccine site as well, we need to continuously urge people to disclose and share their information with the health practitioner so that they are provided with advice that is proper. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I hope we've been able to answer all the questions that have been asked to us. Thank you.
Yeah. Honorable members, may I request that we not only rely on these fortnightly meetings with the minister and her team, we also do have an access to writing questions to them and getting them to expand. And I was just thinking, I missed one, but I want to really worry the minister now to answer the issue of Northwest doing relatively well because of the mining industry there, that they think they are contributing significantly. I will be writing to the department just to explain to me how that actually has been done. So I would also want to invite us that we also continuously engage the department because that will assist our oversight role, not only to rely on these meetings that we have, but also continuously engaging with them on issues that we actually think we need to know about. I would like to then request that we bring this meeting to a close, thanking the minister and her team for the contribution and the update that they've given to us on the vaccines and the rollout. It's highly appreciated. We want to encourage you. The president has asked you to go to 300,000 per day. You're just getting there. Continue doing it, and you probably will come back maybe to meet with us and you'll tell us that you are already exceeding that desire of the president of 300,000 per day. Minister, if you do have your closing comments, we'll give you that space now.
No, thank you, Chair. I've said what I needed to say. Just continue to appreciate the work that is done by members of parliament in supporting the work in terms of the fight against against the pandemic and also supporting our vaccine rollout. We really appreciate that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable Members. You have been in this meeting since 9:45 this morning, and I'm very encouraged by your enthusiasm to still engage the Department of Health and the Minister. We would like to bring this meeting to a close and have a good evening, and the meeting is then adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.